Now, welcome to another inspiring edition of Sound Insight with Dr. Tom Curran.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. This is Dr. Tom Curran. I'm with Sister Colleen, a poor Claire sister here in Spokane. Sister, it's great to be with you.
Thank you, Tom. Dr. Tom, I'm just excited to share about this adventure I just had.
I am super excited to hear about it and to be able to let other folks listen and be able to enjoy the beautiful fruits of your journey as well. So, folks, that's what we're going to do today on the program, and we'll be back in a minute. Hey, this is Dr. Tom Curran, the host of Sound Insight, but also a realtor serving wonderful folks like you in the state of Washington and in Idaho. I've had the privilege and pleasure of helping dozens of families in the last 2.5 years discern and find a strategy, a path, and a plan to help their families find a whole new life in Eastern Washington and Northern Idaho. If I could be of service to you in that, I would love to. Please reach out. DrTomCurran.com, DrTomCurran.com. Welcome back to the program. Sister, I get to lead a prayer for these programs on pretty much a daily basis, except for Mondays when the priests are on. I defer to them. So, Sister, I'm going to defer to you. Would you be open to leading us in a prayer as we get started in our program?
Sure, Dr. Tom. We'd like to pray for the fruits of this radio show. So, Lord, we ask you to help us to proclaim your word, to share about the beautiful experience that 60,000 people had, and that we can be able to continue the fruits of this in the way that is most fitting and most helpful. And we ask this prayer through your mother's intercession and through the power of the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much, Sister. I appreciate that. All right. Now, I have been here in Eastern Washington for 5 years. I've been part of the Sacred Heart Radio family for 20 years.
Yay.
5 and 20, those are two good numbers. But I have another number today, 1. And what's that? It's the first time.
He's been here in the studio.
I have knocked on that front door how many times, and the sisters always say, go away. Do not, you are not welcome here.
That is not true. Believe any of that.
Well, it's the first time I've been to the monastery, and it's really lovely, your setting here.
Thank you.
You're in this beautiful, it's like you have a block.
We have a block. That's right. That's what happened. Exactly 110 years ago yesterday was our 110th anniversary.
Really?
On July 22nd, the sisters arrived in Spokane from Seattle. They had come down from Victoria, Canada, where they had were working with the monastery up there, but then there was a kind of a split there because they had too many folks. So they came down, four of the sisters came down through Seattle by ship and then came over to the Spokane Diocese because the new bishop had invited them to come into the Spokane Diocese. So they arrived on a very hot day, July 22nd, 1914.
Wow. that is amazing. Did you do any kind of special remembrance or celebration?
Well, for Office of Readings, we go through the history, our annals, and we do a reading from the annals, and we kind of talk about it. But we also remember all of our sisters on their anniversaries, and especially the Pioneer Group. Mm-hmm. There's four of them, then three joined them from our proto-monastery in Omaha. And
what's a proto-monastery?
Proto-monastery is the original mother monastery of the order. So the proto-monastery of the Franciscans in Assisi is San Francesco, and the proto-monastery of the Poor Clares is Santa Chiara in Italy. And so our monastery is four monasteries away from Santa Chiara, or actually San Damiano, which is where Clare actually died. So we trace our roots all the way back there.
That is so interesting.
Yeah, so we were happy to have that anniversary yesterday. So
nice. Cool. Sister, have you ever been to San Damiano?
Happily, I was privileged to go there 2 years ago.
Really?
Yes.
So and I have a neat story, and then I want you to respond to it. In that main church, you have the famous Franciscan cross.
The original.
The San Damiano one.
Yeah.
Yes. It's big.
It's large. Very large. Yeah.
Much larger than I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Poor Clares have had that in their possession the whole time.
Really?
Since Francis heard Jesus speak to him.
Wow. Well, and so the first thing that folks will do typically is they'll go and they'll kneel and they'll pray, right? And before that crucifix. And But then when you turn around before you go out, there is this like prison bars.
Mm-hmm.
And there are these sisters,
mm-hmm.
and they're completely shrouded.
Mm-hmm.
You can't see their faces.
Mm-hmm.
And when you come close to them, they'll put a little prayer card so that it kind of gets caught between two of the bars.
Uh-huh.
Now, this was in the 1980s when I was there.
Okay, okay. So they've changed things a little bit since then.
Okay.
But go ahead.
Yeah, so I still remember. I still have this, like, kind of shiver.
Yeah.
Like a divine shiver.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Where going there, and there's this seemingly just this young consecrated lady, woman who's given her life to the Lord as a poor Claire there, and she's giving out these prayer cards. God bless you. God bless you. And it, I still remember that.
Yeah, yeah, they're special groups. So that is where we come from. Those are the Poor Clares. Those are the Primitive Rule Poor Clares, and there are 8 monasteries in this country, the Primitive Rule, that are on the East Coast, and there's a couple, Omaha and ourselves, in the Midwest.
So
we're on the West.
Primitive Rule versus the like Reformed.
Reform
or the
Rule, yeah.
Okay. So what's the difference?
So the Primitive Rule is the rule Clara fought for when she was. Originally she wanted to be a Franciscan, wanted to be a friar, but you can't be, in those days especially, you could not be a friar. That was not possible. So mm-hmm. so Francis admitted her into the order as one of his followers, but she had to live. He was actually building San Damiano for her and her sisters to come, and he made kind of this prophecy there'd be these holy ladies would come to praise the Lord. So she and her sisters came, and then as time went on, she saw the need for a rule to be written about their lifestyle that was following Francis. It was not what the church was used to having for the monastic women at that time. But she was not exactly a monastic. She was more of a mendicant that was a monastic mendicant. So we live on alms just like the friars do, but we have a little bit more challenging because we can't go on big. We mm-hmm. just have to wait on people to come to help us out. And they do. God provides in many, many ways. So she wrote a rule to reflect all this. And so she had the key part of that was the privilege of poverty in the middle of it. And that was her thing. So the privilege of poverty is the centerpiece, and the fraternity with the brothers is the second part of that. And it was not what the Pope wanted to hear at that time, so she had to really work this out. And she actually didn't get it approved till 2 days before her death in 1253.
Wow.
So this was a long... Hers is the only rule for women that was written by a woman and was approved by the church. And at the time, this is the Fourth Lateran Council, so they only allowed 4 rules. And Francis just got his under the wire, and then Claire attached hers to Francis. So she has some Canada's helping her.
Well, and I didn't realize that she lived that much longer than St. Francis.
It was very Marian, actually.
Wow.
Because like Mary, after Jesus went ascended, then she was like the
glue
that held the apostles together. Was the same thing with Claire. She held the friars together as they were expanding rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of things going on. And so because she has such a tight relationship with Francis, they'd go back to her for kind of like reinforcements. Like, what do you think Francis would have thought? What do you think Francis would have said?
Mm-hmm.
So she was there for the friars and to keep encouraging them with this movement.
Okay, so this is interesting. I have no idea. I've never thought of this. Did St. Clare ever meet St. Bonaventure? Because St. Bonaventure was, you know, he was like 12 in the 1250s.
Yes.
He became
she would have met him.
She would have met him.
Mm-hmm.
That's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Because he actually was baptized by Francis.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
How did I not know this?
Mm-hmm. That's why his name is Bonaventure. He was... Francis blessed him. This baby is going to be good.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that is so interesting.
Yeah. In fact, his 800th, I just looked that up, was about 7 years ago.
Okay. Oh, wow.
He died in Lyon, France.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Okay, so I'm talking here with Sister Colleen. She's a poor Claire here in Spokane, and I'm just all swept up in my first visit here. I got to... folks, I got to do things that not many visitors get to do. So I came in the wrong door.
Came in the wrong door. Also, we let them in anyway.
You just come in the wrong door, and you're going to get to see things that normal people don't get to see. So I walked through your refectory
and
met several sisters eating their lunch.
Right.
That was really darling. It was very endearing to me. And then come up here to this beautiful studio, which I just find so – it's almost like a perfect embodiment of being a mendicant – and being monastic, because here you are in your monastery proclaiming the gospel to the whole world. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've thought of that.
Yeah. Well, and when we originally agreed to work with Ron in this project, we were like, how is this going to work? Because we're cloistered contemplatives. It's like a radio station. But then we realized that this is a perfect instrument for proclaiming the word. So we said, we don't have to do a thing. It's right here. So it just comes out of our monastery.
Yeah.
So that explained to people that we house EWTN for the Eastern Washington Diocese in our monastery. They think, wow, that's amazing.
Well, and sister, I do know that you have mass that is available to the public.
Every day.
What time is that? 8?
Now we're in flux because the Franciscans had a huge reorganization of their provinces. So Father Mike just left. So he was saying Mass for us on Wednesdays and first and third Sunday. So now every day it's 8 a.m. weekday. Sundays, Monday through Saturday. Sundays, it was 4:30 p.m. Now this coming Sunday it's going to be 12:30. So stay with us on that one.
Don't show up and knock on the door like me.
Right. Yeah. We'll
put. They may not open.
We put signs on the front door trying to keep people updated. So.
Yeah. Well, it's in a really darling section of Spokane.
Mm-hmm.
Sister, how did you hear the call and be drawn into religious life and religious life as a Port Clare?
So I wanted to be a friar originally because
just like Claire.
That's right. Because my brothers went down to the high school seminary in Santa Barbara. My mom had heard a redemptorist do a mission. So I'm from Montana, for a mission in the St. Louis Parish in Lewistown. And she was very impressed with him. The thing was, he was kind of promoting the high school seminary in Santa Barbara. They were running it concurrently with the friars. So my mom was so impressed, she just sent my brothers down there. And they didn't really have much to say about it, I don't think. But they're freshmen in high school. So she sent them off. And they
met. Well, that's such a sacrifice. Just to say that out loud, how many parents today would hear a mission preacher and be so moved that they're going to dislodge their sons during their high school years and say, you're going to go live with these religious, and there you're going to grow up as in your high school years?
Mom and dad were very pro-religious. We always had priests, any priests in the area, she was inviting them in for dinner.
Where did that faith come from for her?
She was from her parents. They were very strong Catholics. They were Bohemian. And dad was Irish.
Oh, wow.
So it was, and I have a lot of religious in my family.
Do you?
Uh-huh.
Wow. So do you ever have a family reunion and get to connect with?
Actually, Mom's 90th was last year. So the sister said, you really need to be there for that. So I went back there for Mom's 90th. But I had an aunt that put on a family reunion. And that was really interesting. It was for the Bohemian side, and I hadn't met half these people. And I found out I had a deacon relative from Chicago. They came from Chicago because there's a very big Bohemian enclave in Chicago, and so there was that's where the part of them came from.
Wow.
And dad's side, I think, maybe related to the visionaries in Knock, because they were Burns.
Really?
Yeah, I think. I'm not, but there's a lot of Burns, so it's like the fifth most common name in Ireland, so you know, who knows? That may be a long shot.
Sure. All right, so sister, you grew up in that environment. You have your brothers who head off, and what about you?
So I went to school, got my degree at Montana State as a microbiologist. I was looking for maybe an opportunity to be a veterinarian, but I grew up on a ranch, so I knew what working with large animals meant. I thought, that's not really that easy for a woman. I thought, maybe I'd like to go into diagnostics instead. So I went into the laboratory part of it, and with lab, you can either apply that to people or animals. But you do have to intern. So I got accepted for an internship at Deaconess Hospital here in Spokane. So I came out here. And then in the meantime, I was thinking already about vocation. And I thought, well, And I had looked it up, and there were Port Clairs in Spokane. I thought, huh, and they're connected with the Friars, and that's about all I knew about it. So I visited them, and the morning of it kind of was interesting. Someone tried to rip out the battery of the car. I lived in Lower South Hill, and there's some interesting neighbors. So so I thought, well, that's an interesting sign. So I thought I'd come over here and see how the sisters were. And I really liked meeting the sisters. They were very nice. And the more I came, the better I liked it. And about halfway through, I decided I'd really rather be in the monastery than finishing my year. And the abbess at the time, Sister Mary Rita, said she saw right through it. She said, no way. You finish your year. Don't be getting out of it. And then you can come join us. Mm-hmm. So I joined them in November of 87.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So this is 37 years.
Almost 40 years in 27.
My goodness.
So it's gone very, very quickly.
Yeah. Well, isn't that, oh, wow. I wasn't expecting you to say that.
Yeah.
It's gone very, very quickly.
Yeah.
Because you have that rhythm of life. Hi, this is Dr. Tom Curran, and you know me as the host of Sound Insight. I am also letting folks know that as a realtor licensed in the state of Washington and in Idaho, I love serving Catholic families and others who are discerning a move for yourselves. It's much more than buying or selling a home. It's discerning a whole new life. If that's something that you would find a help in, if I could be of service to you, please be in touch. You can find out more at drtomcurran.com, drtomcurran.com.
Mm-hmm.
And so, folks, if you're listening, I'm talking with Sister Colleen. She's a Port Clair religious sister here in Spokane with the community, and they house the Sacred Heart Radio station here in Spokane, and a nice studio.
Mm-hmm.
Sister, I want a studio like this.
Yeah, it is a nice studio.
It's really nice. It's a nice studio here, and Ron's told me about it. He's come out here a number of times to tweak things and fix things and update things and all of that. But this is a lovely first visit of mine, and just getting to know you, Sister Colleen, this is really really beautiful.
Thank you.
Thanks for being willing to just sort of share more of your story.
Yeah.
I know you think we're talking about the Eucharistic Congress. We're going to get there. We have time, but people want to get to know you better.
All right.
So you said that 37 years has gone by so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have thought, oh, the pace of life here is it's contemplative. And so there's sort of a richness, almost like a crock pot. You know, there's slow cooking and so tell me more about that.
So we have a pretty intense schedule. When you come to live in a cloistered monastery, you're living in a good term, crock pot, because it's very intense. You have a schedule that is pretty detailed. So we start off with our morning prayer, personal prayer before that. Morning prayer starts at 7, and an office of readings goes along with it. And then we have some adoration, not a lot. Then we have Mass, and then there's breakfast. We have breakfast afterwards, and the short time of work period, a couple hours of work period, then our midday meal, which is dinner for the monastics. Most people have lunch, but we have dinner, and then we have supper at night. And then we have an afternoon period of work, and then some time for reflection before prayer at 4:30, and then we have our evening meal. We usually watch the news. We try to watch the news in the evening about 6 or 6:30, and then we go in the compline for night prayer.
Wow.
And we have night prayer around the dinner table at night, and that's kind of a nice way of doing it.
Nice.
So,
Sister, as you how would you identify the specific charism of the Port Clairs?
The Port Clairs are contemplatives. We're in papal enclosure, but we do have permission to going out for the necessities of living. So, you know, groceries and banking. But the charism is prayer and intercession, and it connects, dovetail with the friars, because the Franciscan charism for the friars is prayer, community, which we also have, poverty, which we already have, and evangelization, which we already have.
Mm-hmm.
So that all is part of that. So the emphasis for us is prayer and poverty, and the emphasis for the friars is, I would say, it's just all of them. prayer, poverty, fraternity, and, mm-hmm. and evangelization.
So when I think of St. Francis, I think of Lady Poverty.
Mm-hmm.
You said a phrase that I hadn't heard before, the privilege of poverty. There are not many people listening to this program who are thinking, I am so privileged in my life because of the poverty that I'm experiencing.
Right.
So it's a real paradox. So help us understand the meaning of the privilege of poverty.
Well, privilege actually has kind of a double meaning. At that time, it's like the canonical term for exemption. So the monastics at that time were mainly Benedictine. So they lived in large abbeys, and they had a lot of property. If you've been to Italy or any, these are massive places, mm-hmm. and they have massive acreage to go with it. And to keep the place running, they would sell crops. They would take tolls on their. They had roads, so they had tolls on their bridges and on their roads.
And they never knew that.
Mm-hmm, and they would take, tariff on some of the products. So they would take in money. It was like a little farm community, and so they would live off the land and not the people that worked there. Claire came from wealth. She was not nobility, but she was right under that, and she had taken Francis's message to heart so much, because at that time the middle class was starting to come into power, and she really didn't see how she could follow Francis's message and not promote the poor, mm-hmm. basically. So she didn't want to take her income off the backs of the poor, so that was her thing. So she wanted to live directly off of God's providence. So mm-hmm. she had to get exemption from that, from the papacy, to not live like the Benedictines did, because that was the only model of monasticism at that time. So mm-hmm. she was developing a new model of monasticism. So that's what was so revolutionary about this.
Well, that's a great word, revolutionary, because when I think about that form of poverty, sister, I think of like radical trust in God's providence.
Mm-hmm.
I think of a sense of radical detachment,
mm-hmm.
that even detachment to the means of getting any kind of sustenance,
mm-hmm.
right? We're not going to rely on tolls. We're not going to rely on crops. We're going to truly put ourselves way out over the edge and say, we trust in God and who God sends to us.
And that goes on today.
And it works.
It does. And it
happens.
Has for 800 years.
Yeah.
And it's amazing sometimes how those prayers get answered. And it's actually not just for us, because I can tell you of a lot of families that have told us they have to trust on God for many things. And they, they don't know sometimes how they're going to pay their bills. And sometimes God really does amazing things. He always does amazing things. So.
All right. So, sister, I want you to speak. We'll take a quick break here. Then we come back. I'm going to ask you to speak a message to folks who have wealth. Back in a minute. Welcome back to the program. This is Tom Karn. I'm talking with Sister Colleen. Sister is a Poor Clare religious here in Spokane. And we are in not just their monastery, but we're in their studio in their monastery.
Right.
Which is, I wish I had such poverty.
Right.
This is amazing.
Well, actually, God rest his soul, Bob Ron
uh-huh.
put this together.
This has the stamp of Bob all over
yes.
it.
Yes.
It is. Yeah, it is. It's organized. It's professional. You get all the right parts and pieces. I recognize the sliders.
Yep.
This soundboard that's here. That I see the hand of Bob.
It was so lovely to meet him. We just really pray for the family, because oh my gosh, he was a wonderful man.
Yes. Yes. And I'm sure he's smiling down from heaven or purgatory. We pray for him to be freed from that quickly.
Yes. Yes.
All right. So, sister, you spoke in a way that is. It speaks of freedom and peace. Again, folks that have some wealth or just resources, right? And
mm-hmm.
they've got bills and they've got the challenges of dealing with financial matters day to day. Not a lot of peace there. And especially when we come up against limits and challenges. And then the question becomes, should I be generous? Should I extend myself here? When it doesn't make a lot of financial sense, but I feel this prompting that this might be what the Lord wants.
Right.
Okay, so I've got just a quick story. So I have a building in Airway Heights. It's not a big building. It's a small one. And I've been trying to sell it. Have not been successful. So you can pray for that, sister. But in the meantime, a nonprofit organization came to me and said, your space would be perfect. We serve all of the poor. We have a food pantry, and we have families that are like fleeing domestic abuse, and we've got stuff that we give away to the poor, and your space would be perfect. And I'm like, great, why don't you buy the building? We can't afford it. Well, why don't you lease the building? We can't afford it. But the building would be perfect for the accomplishment of our mission. And I felt prompted to call her today. So I did. She said that they have been undergoing all their staff, all these spiritual attacks. And she said, God's got a breakthrough. God's got a breakthrough. Just you wait. And then I called. I called out of the blue. I hadn't talked to her in a couple of months. Uh-huh. She says, no matter what happens here, you are the messenger sent from God. Because I had said to her, hey, can we figure out a way to see if we can get you in that building? And so part of what I'm trying to discern is, if I were to lease the building to her, I'd lose money every month. But I would be accomplishing a thing that is very like in alignment with what God has for my life. But financially, this is not an easy time to do something like that. Mm-hmm. All right, sister, this is live spiritual direction. Let's go. How do you bring the spirit of St. Clair and of the privilege of poverty to bear on my situation?
Well, that's a good question. Just takes a lot of prayer. And do you pray with the person?
Prayed with her on the phone before we hung up. We prayed together.
Yeah. Have you prayed with her financial advisor?
I have not. I actually put in another call to one of her benefactors who would potentially buy the building. And I'd reached out to him about getting together next week.
Yeah. So sometimes, here we have the synodal process. So that's usually with prayer and discernment, something will rise to the surface. So mm-hmm. I think we just have to give it time. And if you have time, sometimes you don't have time. I think the process is not always in the best interest, is to say, here, you can have it. That doesn't always work. So you have to really discern this and say, Lord, what is the best use of my resources for this situation? And is this the best use for their resources? Mm-hmm. And it does take some time for that answer to come forth. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't always come quickly.
Okay, I like that. So it's not a simple yes or no. It's keep bringing it to the Lord in prayer. Bring the right people to the table. Look for the signs. Are these people truly people of faith? Is there a sense of, like, say, spiritual connection mm-hmm. that what their mission is mm-hmm. associated with my sense of mission, so that I could see an alignment there?
And you can ask for a sign. Yeah. You can ask for some kind of input there, or something that the Lord will let you know if you're on the right track or not.
I love that. I'm going to do that. Mm-hmm. I am going to. Actually, sister, you pray for me right now. And not just for me, but I bet there are a bunch of other people listening to this who are in a similar quandary. They're also wondering, like, Lord, what are you doing? What are you asking of me? Because with the economy the way it is, with the amount of inflation, with the challenges that people have, lots of folks, not on the poverty side, trying to embrace it as a privilege and trust in God, but rather the people who have wealth, not trying to say, I need to be more conservative and restrained in my giving mm-hmm. so that I don't put myself in a risky position.
Right, right.
Rather than saying, Lord, it's all yours, and I want to be open-handed with what you have for me mm-hmm. to be able to know what that means.
You have to remember who you're talking to. This is the Lord of the universe, who $1 million is nothing,
all his.
Nothing to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have to remember who it is you're working with and ask him to give you the insight and the wisdom to know how best to use the resources he's given you for his glory and for his kingdom. So the kingdom is what we're after here, not just your kingdom, but his kingdom. So you have to realize which way am I headed here. And that does take some serious prayer. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you need to speak to someone else to make sure you're hearing, right? You know, kind of bounce it off. And that's why it's the art of, it's kind of almost like Lectio Divina. The synodal process is very much like that, where you pray and think about it and pray again and think about it and pray again and come to a conclusion.
Okay. I love that, sister. I will definitely do that. All right, I guess we have to talk about the National Eucharistic Congress, since that was what got me in the front door.
That's right. Okay. That's what got us going.
Yeah. Well, Ron texted me and said, you, Sister Colleen here, Port Claire in Spokane at the monastery here, went to the Congress in Indianapolis and had the privilege of being there. And so I want to hear the story, Sister.
Right. So we discerned, well, actually, I went there because I was part of the vocation team for the Port Claire Federation in this country. There's two federations. And we put together a joint vocation team, and then one of the sisters decided we really could do this. We really could have a table at that Congress to promote us, but also just to be a part of the excitement there, mm-hmm. you know, be part of the promotion of the Eucharist. Because Claire is not officially one of their patrons, but she would definitely be being promoted there because they had all kinds of things about St. Clair there.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she was younger when she responded initially. I don't know. Or maybe because of adoration in the Eucharist?
It's because of her story. And Drew Mariani quoted this. The Saturday night, I was just going to, there's three of us going to stand up and cheer, but there's, you know, 60,000 people so that, you know, they wouldn't hear us.
We've been drowned
out.
Yeah,
right.
What was the story?
So he said he was so impressed with Claire because she was known for the protection she gave to her sisters and to the town of Assisi. When she was in her upper years, she was sick and had, they think, arthritis of some kind. And these marauding brigands came in there. They call them Saracens, and they came into the courtyard of the San Damiano, and they were going to break in. And the sisters were like panicked. It's like, we can't. These guys are known for mm-hmm. what they do, and we can't do anything. And can you protect us? And Claire was sick. She was like, she said, bring me the Eucharist. And they didn't have a monstrance at that time. They had a small box. They called it like a pyx of some kind. Mm-hmm. So they kind of propped her up against, and there's a window there in the upper room of the building, and she held up the pyx to the window and said, Lord, I cannot protect them. You'll have to do it. And they heard a voice, an audible voice that said, I will always protect you. And so every year on the 20th of June, the town of Assisi has a celebration called the Voto, so the celebration of the vow. So the Lord, the marauders took off. I don't know what they saw. They saw something. And they left, and then it happened again. There's a second wave of this. And then at that time, then she asked for protection for the town of Assisi. Otherwise, they would have had a siege against them. They probably would have starved.
Wow.
So she's considered a protectress of the town of Assisi through her connection with the Eucharist. And so Drew picked up on that and told her story to 50,000 people. We go, yay!
Well, and it's interesting because it wasn't as if she said, I'm going to pray and fast for 40 days, and then protection will come. Hmm. It was the fruit of the life that she had been living that radiated or was available to have God's power, his protection, become manifest.
And she had such a tight relationship with the Lord because it was Franciscan prayer is very incarnational because of Francis's whole experience with Jesus talking to him. And so Claire picked up on that, and she practiced what you call Lectio Visio, not Lectio Divino. So she would look at the crucifix that spoke to Francis and spend long hours in the chapel praying before this crucifix. And so she and the Lord were very close. So she had this tight relationship, and I'm sure she had no doubt something was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think that's so powerful. It's that confidence in the Lord,
mm-hmm.
right? That confidence that he's going to be faithful to his promises.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's why they
expect great things from God.
Yeah, that's why they live. In fact, she has many, many miracles. And the Pope in those days would come to visit the sisters, or sometimes they would stay. There's a residence that they would stay. They're kind of the papal entourage. And he joined the sisters for lunch one day, and he wanted her to pray. And she was saying, you know, no, Your Holiness, you're the Pope. You pray. Mm-hmm. So he says, no, you pray. You're the abbess. And so she prayed, and there were little crosses that appeared on the bread. That's the origin of passing out bread on the Feast of St. Clair. We don't always do it, but sometimes we do it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and she has some tremendous miracles. And so that's from that deep mm-hmm. connection with the Lord. Yeah, she just didn't have no doubt something was going to happen.
So, Sister, you live a monastic life here, a contemplative life, but you also have a sense of connection to the world. You watch the news every day, so to know how to pray. You're active here in the within the walls, mm-hmm. while you're also praying for those who are approaching you with needs and as the Lord leads you. Do you find that there are people who are drawn, like young women are drawn to your life precisely because it's so prophetically different from the world that is distracted and full of noise, like with, you know, smartphones and internet stuff, mm-hmm. that people are hungering for silence, solitude, communion, community that's authentic and is crockpot rather than microwave.
Right. And actually, relationship, because a lot of the young are really in search of a relationship. When we interview or talk to young people that are discerning, they want to come and talk to us. They do not want to do any, you know, we might send a few emails, but they want to come talk to us. They want to establish that face-to-face. And so that's why they like adoration, because it's face-to-face. It's not this distant relationship. They have a sense of being close to the Lord. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing when we're talking to them. Yes, they are hungry. And it's very interesting how deep this has become.
Yeah. So you now had the chance to go be in the midst of a great crowd in Indianapolis, and you're there probably at a booth or a table.
We had a little table.
A little table.
With 200 other booths, just and 60,000 of our best friends.
That's right. Any story jump out at you from like a young woman or someone coming to you and engaging in conversation?
Well, we had some older. It was a slow start. The first day, there was some people there. But the second day, oh my heavens, it took off. And we had all these people. And right next to us were Dominicans from the St. Albert province, not the California province, but it's a different province. And they had this relic of St. Jude there. It had a huge line all day long, every day, of people coming up to be prayed with and for with this relic of St. Jude. So, but in the meantime, people were kind of swinging by our booth. And we had a lot of 11-year-olds, third, fourth graders, because and being in vocation work, they tell you that 11-year-olds and the 11th year in high school is very often the time when the vocational search is going on. So we had these little kids showing up that wanted to know about St. Clair, and they were so cute, but it was really interesting. The spirit was definitely busy.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Father Jeff Lewis, he's mm-hmm. at St. Mary's, and mm-hmm. he brought that up. I don't know who came up with that insight of 11 years old in 11th grade.
Some smart vocation person.
That's clever. I mean, I think there's a real insight there.
Yeah.
All right, sister, what was that? Give me a couple of highlights. Like, what were some of the highlights of the Congress itself?
So they had adoration every night in midst of this humongous crowd, this Lucas Oil Stadium where they had, it holds like 80,000. This is where the Baltimore Colts play. It's massive. So they would have, and it had like five levels or six levels of bleachers around the sides. So we were sometimes, mainly we're on the sides. And so they would, during the midst of the, what they call the evening revival, and so they bring in the Blessed Sacrament with a long procession of priests and altar boys. The first night, they brought in the Eucharistic pilgrims, the ones that did that nationwide pilgrimage. Mm-hmm. That was very exciting. But there's a small group that came in representing each of the routes, and then they would have adoration. And then the night of adoration that was really profound was this group, they had Floriani. They're a Gregorian men's a cappella four-piece group.
Okay, I've never heard of them.
Oh my, when they started, they were all in black on the stage. You couldn't see them. You just heard them. And it was very black, and they had just the lights, spotlights on the Blessed Sacrament. And it was a huge monstrance that the Blessed Father had blessed just for this whole event. And the thing, it was probably stood 3 feet high. It was massive. And there was like a dinner plate size host in there, so you could really see it. And with the lighting in that arena, it was fabulous. And this men's group started up, totally silent until they were hit it with the baritone, and they were so good. I had goosebumps running up down my spine the whole night. Oh my goodness, they were good. And it was just really created this very intense prayer evening for mm-hmm. everyone, I think. At least that's the evening I like the best, because I like Gregorian chants, so it was good.
Who was your favorite speaker?
Well, we had Bishop Barron was right up there.
Mm-hmm.
He did very, very
no surprise.
Yeah, yeah. They had in the evening session. We had Mother Olga.
Oh, was she Nigerian? No.
Iraqi.
Oh, wow. Okay.
She spoke on the work she does in Boston, and she works she does it all. She's like another Mother Teresa.
Really?
Yeah. She's about that big.
She's really short.
She's very, very profound.
Sister, when you say, I'm talking to Sister Colleen, when you say she's that big, people are not, they're not going to be able to see that.
She's
about 5 feet
Mother
tall.
Mother Teresa's, I don't know if she's 5 foot, maybe
not even
4'8 or 4'10. She is very little.
Okay.
And just so holy, oh my heavens, you know, you could just see the glowing coming off of her. And the cardinal, the big
so
closing
table?
Mass, Tagle.
Tagle.
Yeah, he was really good.
Yeah.
Oh, he just spoke so down to earth for the people.
Mm-hmm.
And his whole thing was you have been given a gift, and if you don't think it's a gift, you're probably not going to share it. You need to appreciate this and appreciate your giftedness in order to share it. And he just was, and he's very funny. I mean, he has a great sense of humor.
Yeah, I guess he's pretty entertaining.
Yeah, and he walked the procession with us.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't know that because, you know, we were in this humongous procession for the Eucharistic. It was on Saturday. They had a very large Eucharistic procession downtown Indianapolis with all the religious and all the priests and all the clergy. And on one of the video clips I saw, he was at the very back walking there next to the Blessed Sacrament. So I thought that was very impressive.
Mm.
And it was hot. We were all dying.
Was it Spokane hot? Was it 95 degree hot?
It was 95 degree
was
hot.
Was it really?
Yeah. Well, it was I would say probably 89, 90. Not really hot, but it was little, just enough humidity to make it hot. Yeah. And there was an astronaut that spoke. I was really impressed with on Sunday morning also. And I didn't know anything about him. He was a convert. And Colonel Mike Hopkins, and he was talking about he took the Blessed Sacrament with him into space.
Oh, I heard about that. So he was the one. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was just saying, you know, until he finally acknowledged that this is something he really wanted. It took him a while to kind of come to that point. And then when he did, he was really glad he did because he had a couple of really scary spacewalks that he's glad that the Blessed Sacrament is right there. So,
wow.
Yeah. I think the thing that really... I was trying to put a word on it. I think this Congress and Revival help people to come to a working knowledge of the Eucharist.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds kind of funny, but it's like you realize how much you actually need this. It's not just devotional where, you know, you say the right prayers and you do the right things in chapel.
Mm-hmm.
It's much deeper than that.
Well, Sister, it's a kind of a passé thing to identify 70% of active Catholics don't believe in the real presence, right? You hear that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Do you sense that this revival was like sowing seeds for a revival of faith, a renewal of faith in the Eucharist?
I would say that's what their attempt was, and mm-hmm. also to bring people back to daily, you know, more active practice of going to Mass.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, that's, I would say this definitely will have some large ripples.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very pleased with the results. And they had a large contingency of youth there. They have families. It was multi-generational. You had a wide variety of people there. I think this cannot help but do that.
Yeah. Well, and did you hear any stories about people who faced trials and difficulties, like trying to get there?
Everybody did.
Did they really?
Yes. I don't think anyone had an easy time of it. I think the powers of darkness were very busy trying to disrupt this thing. And mm-hmm. even, we were just talking about that, our sisters, there was six of us there, seventh on the last day. Everybody had a challenge getting there. We were under some kind of oppression. There was just different things that were kind of going wrong, and we just were tired and just were not feeling good about this. And we kind of worked too hard getting ready, and it was
people a little short with each
little
other.
And it was kind of a rocky start, and you were feeling kind of overwhelmed by the whole thing and the just sheer magnitude of it. And finally, I went to confession and said, you know, something's out of whack here. So and that helped a great deal. And then joy reappeared. the peace reappeared, and I think it seemed like things, and after, and then they had quite a healing session Thursday morning with Dr. Mary Healy and another priest there, and I think that helped.
Wow.
Because I think everybody had their own little challenges they had to overcome.
Yeah. I got an email, a text from a buddy of mine who said, yeah, hey, pray for this family. This guy took his five kids there. They showed up at their, like, I don't know if it was like an Airbnb. They showed up at the place they had rented, and there were squatters in it.
Yep.
And the squatters wouldn't leave.
Couldn't get them out.
And they were stuck. So now here they are. They had spent their money on this, and now they don't have money. They don't have a place to stay. And what are they going to do?
Yeah.
And that's like, oh, yeah. Goodness.
And there were some amazing acts of generosity. People were going all out. We had some hosts that were so generous. We stayed with this couple that they put us up in different rooms. It was just really, really nice. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, it wasn't easy for them. They had to do something to prepare for this. Mm-hmm. And I think the city in Indianapolis really put out there. And there's a host parish there at St. John's that was like the host parish across the street from the convention center.
Was that the church? Did they have adoration there? Mm-hmm. Because I saw a picture and it was full. It was just packed. A big church. It was just packed with people.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
so cool.
They had adoration every day, and they had morning prayer at 7:30, and then they had the family rosary at 8 o'clock at the Lucas Stadium. And then they would go into Mass, and then they would have the sessions after that.
Mm-hmm. So, I read an account that in the closing Mass that the procession was like 25 minutes long.
It was 30.
30 minutes.
Yeah. And yeah, amazingly, I did see Bishop Daly there. I didn't think it was going to happen. They told the religious to be on the floor, so we were, and I happened to be on the end, so I did catch his eye, and so we did know that each other were there. Yeah, it was a 30-minute procession.
Wow.
Because I didn't know that our host told us that all the parishes in Indianapolis were invited to come. So they didn't have Sunday Mass for the city. They all showed up there. It was filled to the brim. It was filled.
Wow, that's amazing.
And there was a couple of cardinals, they had the archbishops, they had some Eastern Rite bishops, they had an archabbot there, they had the nuncio, was the nuncio, I don't think, yeah, he was there, I think the nuncio was still there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you feel like they, did they do any effort to say, here are five things to do or consider doing now that you've been here? Like if you made it here, you've received a grace.
Mm-hmm.
And now, besides the exhortation, go share what you've received, you mentioned make a commitment to go to adoration once a week. Make a commitment to go to daily Mass twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
Go to confession. Bring a friend. Were there any sort of follow-on initiatives?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the big one they were promoting was called Walk with One.
Okay.
They kept it as simple as they could keep it.
Yeah, that's pretty simple.
Yeah, they just want you to find somebody who has been away from the church or is curious about the church and share what you have. You don't have to be a theologian. You don't have to be a canon lawyer. And just share with them your experience and invite them to, come along with you. Or just fill in the gaps with them if they have curious questions.
Mm-hmm.
Be generous, be cheerful, be loving. And that was
all right. I'm talking to Sister Colleen. She is a Port Clair religious here in Spokane at the monastery. Sister, walk with me. Walk with one. Here's a live example.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Sister. Where do we start if we're going to walk together? Walk with one.
So I would ask. Do you have any questions?
Yes, I've already asked you 100 questions. but let me ask the question.
You're the wrong one to ask that.
No, I know. But so I could say something like, Sister, I don't really believe what I was brought up to believe as a Catholic. Should I be going to Mass?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, then you would come to Mass with me, and then you would say, can I explain some things to you, or mm-hmm. Or explain to them what you find attractive about it. Most of the time, it's share what you have, not what you don't have. So
I like that.
Yeah.
Well, that's what happened in my life. When I have something, I share it, and when I don't, I just make stuff up.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes
that was a joke, Sister.
Sometimes that works.
Sister, that was a joke. sorry, I kind of cut you off guard there.
That's actually they had a speaker, Chris Stefanik.
Oh, yeah.
He was very good, too. He's one of the top speakers I liked. And he had a few jokes like that where he would do this little curveball on me.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been around the block a few times, so he does a great job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So walking with you, that you just invite them to join you, or you join them. And so, you know, what do you find hard? Mm-hmm. You know, what do you find challenging?
So going down that line, there might be some, and we're almost done. We just got a few more minutes here, sister. And I want to give you a chance to make sure if there's something else that you want to say about the event, that mm-hmm. you have a chance to do
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just finish this question and then you can go from there. Mm-hmm. And that would be, what do you say to Catholics who feel ill-equipped to know how to answer a question? You said just share what you know. What if they feel like they know almost nothing and so they don't have a lot to give?
Well, there are some amazing people out there that can fill in the gaps. And you do have to do some study, I would say, that to help bridge that gap. And Father Mike Schmitz is one of the most popular ones with his Bible in a Year podcast. And then there's another one that I would take my novices through with the walking through the Bible. Mm-hmm. And I forget what the speaker was on that. But there's some very, very good scriptures courses that you can fill in. There are numerous apologetics teachers that can tell you anything you want to know. You just have to look online and ask questions, and you can, mainly thing is open your mouth and ask some questions. Someone will answer them.
Well, I love that. And I think part of what you're saying is if we really consider it important, like an important part of our lives,
mm-hmm.
to be these public witnesses to Jesus Christ,
mm-hmm.
because of the difference that Christ makes and he intends to make, then doesn't that deserve some effort?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that deserve a little bit of sacrifice
mm-hmm.
to be able to say, I can go study. If I don't know, let me study. If I need to learn, I'll work hard
mm-hmm.
right? because of the good that's there, the good that's available.
Right.
Okay.
And actually, when I'm working with the novices, if someone asks me a question I don't have an answer for, I just say, I don't know. Let me go look it up.
Mm-hmm.
And usually people are happy to have you do so.
I love that. It's very humble.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, sister, we only have like 3 minutes left. So what would you want to share? I asked a bunch of questions, but I know that you've got things on your list there that maybe we didn't get to.
Yeah. Well, I think what was most impressive is just the sheer intensity of this thing. People were there because they wanted to be,
mm-hmm.
and they were so hungry, and they were just like, it was like sponges. You had like 60,000 sponges out there just soaking in all this, and you don't think that it's, you know, people, you kind of become blasé. I go to Mass, I do this. You don't realize the power of all this, these things that are there, and especially when we're going through the exhibit hall with all that's out there. I mean, most of the time I didn't know all these different groups were out there. I learned something every single time I went through that hall. And the sheer size of the church is amazing.
It's probably a great encouragement,
mm-hmm.
right, to think
mm-hmm.
that there are so many apostolates and ministries and folks that are eagerly attempting to serve the Lord and build the church.
Mm-hmm. And everybody's there for whatever part of the kingdom they think they can contribute to.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that procession was really earth, you know, really astounding.
Yeah.
Earth-shaking and astounding. But literally, we were pounding on the pavement in Indianapolis.
Wow.
And so he took it all the way down the street. It's about a mile down to the end of their main street. And then we went on to what they call the mall in front of the Korean War Memorial.
Okay.
And they put the Blessed Sacrament up on top there. And it was probably about 50 feet up there. And we were looking up there, melting as we were looking.
Wow. Melting and praying.
And praying, yes. Yeah. But it was about 3 hours because we got back to the conference center about 6 o'clock and we started at 3.
Wow. Okay, so that sounds like you had full days.
Very full, yeah. Wow. We kind of fall in the bed about 10, 11 o'clock at mm-hmm. night. And we had it better than most because our hosts were so good to us. But there's a mm-hmm. lot of people that were just, you know, crashing and crowded in the hotel rooms.
Yeah. Sleeping on floors, mm-hmm. just give me a pillow
mm-hmm.
and a blanket.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. And you got back, folks, sister got back late last night.
Midnight.
I gave her many weeks' notice for the interview. It's actually many minutes' notice. And said, "Sister, come on, please. We got to do this right away. We want to get this on the air."
Right.
And you were so kind and generous to do that.
Well, it's important to get this out. So.
Amen.
And Bishop was there. He and Father Ratwisti put on a grassroots vocation talk that was very well received.
Wow.
Yeah. And Father Kyle's dad was there too. I never got a chance to meet him, but they put on this talk about vocation.
I love it.
Recruiting, and I thought that was wonderful.
Well, he does a great job, so no surprise there.
Mm-hmm,
so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Sister Colleen, any final words?
Look online. I think these talks are available, and you can actually get a lot of them on YouTube.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So it's not hard to find them, because I'm going to have to review, because it's like drinking out of fire hose. There's so much stuff coming at you that I can't recall it all. You know, you just have to go back over it. It'll be many months worth of
content.
Meditation and contemplation and just kind of processing all this.
I love it.